the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, editor-in-chief of the Science of Psychotherapy magazine, and I'm here with our magazine managing editor and great friend, Richard Hill.
Hi, I'm Matt. Yes, I am here indeed, and I'm looking forward very much. You're going to tell me about who we're having today, who is extremely interesting because I've kind of got a bit of simpatico with her history.
Yes. So we are off to Brooklyn in New York, and we're going to be talking to Francesca Maxime. Now, in her biography, she calls herself a Haitian, Dominican, Italian, American somatic experiencing practitioner.
Wow.
That's a mouthful. And she is accredited in all of these different things. And what we'll do is we'll point people to her biography because she has a very impressive list of many, many things that she has done, including the 2019 recipient of the International Society of Traumatic Stress Studies Outstanding Student Advocacy and Service Award. And interestingly, the 2019 first prize winner of the Allen Ginsberg Poetry Award.
And of course, I take it back to the wonderful fact that she used to work in the industry of entertainment, and she was a journalist and an anchor, and so it's really terrific. She'll know what a microphone is, which is great.
she will. She is a fascinating character. So, Richard, let's go across to New York and have a chat to Francesca. Francesca Maxime, thank you for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. How are you?
I'm well, Matthew. It's really lovely to be here, and thank you so much for the invitation.
And I'm here too, Richard, saying hello to you, Francesca. I already know that you're well, but I'm well too.
Richard, thank you. It's great to be here with you too.
Now, Francesca, you're from the United States. You're over in New York. Can you tell us a little bit about where you've come from in terms of being in the space of therapy and trauma therapy? Maybe a little bit of background for our listeners.
Sure. I call myself a sort of well-being guide and life coach, and I really am just sort of I was telling a friend today, maybe a bit of a Sherpa. Like, I kind of know the territory, but everybody has to kind of hike a little bit, but maybe I can ease the burden.
That's great.
I'm a poet, so I speak in metaphor.
Yeah, wonderful.
Which is interesting because we use the limbic brain a lot when we're trying to do the trauma resolution kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was a journalist for many years. I was a TV news anchor and reporter. And the question that I always asked was, why do people do what we do? Like, what precipitates the circumstances that sort of end up being the story I would go to? And then found that increasingly with the media, I wasn't being able to really dig into that. I was more just reporting facts and kind of parroting back things that had already happened. And about 5 years ago, I want to say, I got arrested for not using my directional when I was driving. And because I wouldn't take a breathalyzer, and it's not that I wouldn't or I didn't, it's that I just ended up not doing it. I spent the night in jail. And the next morning I woke up and I said, wow, I thank God or the universe or, the cosmic energy has more in store for me than spending my time this way, because I've been gifted with so much and I cannot figure out why, given all I've been gifted with, I haven't been able to feel better about myself or my circumstances or live differently or be differently or have different self-beliefs around worthiness and all these other crazy things. So that was when I was introduced to somatic experiencing therapy and mindfulness meditation, because my mom had been on a Thich Nhat Hanh meditation retreat and gave me the card of a woman who was a somatic experiencing practitioner. And after that, I found it so helpful and learned so much and really geeked out so much about the neuroscience and the interpersonal neurobiology and all of that kind of stuff that I kind of left the journalism and went on sabbatical to just study it and then to practice it and then to teach it. The day after I got out of jail, I quit drinking, I became a vegetarian, I started integrating these sort of mindfulness tenets, like the precepts of, not killing, not harming, not lying, like no sexual misconduct, and just sort of giving myself this framework. I mean, other people don't have to do that. It was good for me. It was supportive for me. This ethical living that helped counter some of the crazy media world I had been in, and the crazy world. And I had a lot of complex and developmental trauma also as a kid growing up, but I also had a lot of resources. So my sense of self-esteem didn't match what I was presenting, but I couldn't figure out why. And now I know I couldn't figure out why, because it's not a left brain process. It's a limbic process. It's an emotional brain process. And once I started to unpack that, I just sort of like wanted to sing it to from the rooftops and share it with everybody, because I'm like, it's possible. It really is possible to feel different, like to have everything be different.
Yeah, yeah. And that's such a dramatic shift from that world of, entertainment, really, in journalism through to what you're doing now. But I'm also imagining that there's some skills that you would have brought across from the world of media now into what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think asking the right question, mm-hmm. knowing when to pause, right. trying to sort of elicit, like, what's the heart of this? Like, mm-hmm. what are we really talking about here? And then, of course, my media arm in terms of the podcast I do, which is on Ram Dass's Be Here Now Network, and Rerooted, like interviewing some of these, you know, big names that you often interview, like the Bruce Eckers and the Stephen Porges and this, you know, Peter Levine, that it kind of keeps my toe in the water a little bit on the journalism piece. But directly in sessions with people, I think it's just the curiosity. I don't have an agenda. It's the main point of like asking the question and not, mm-hmm. and now I'm free to see where the person is going, or where their body is going, or where their mind is going, or where their spirit is, or where it's not going, or where it's stuck, as opposed to the story of a deadline and have a live shot at 5 o'clock.
Right. Yes. Richard, curiosity.
Yes. Well, this is my main central work that I do. And and I can see it in what you're doing, because we get stuck in curiosity for information, which is what happens in those media things. But it's moving into that curiosity for playfulness and serendipity. But then it what the real emergence, which is what I see you're doing, is finding, okay, what does this mean for you? Where do you, how do you engage with this? And I imagine that was a part of what you were going through. And now I'll just ask the question, is that sense of self-esteem, that sense of worth and things, a lack of meaning? Did you find that, was there a trigger or something saying, I know what I mean, I know what I'm about? I now got a sense of what I'm trying to find about me. I mean, we all put this off to being the weird tree-hugging strange people, but it's actually the root of what makes trauma a lesson rather than a damage.
I love that, yeah. A lesson, a portal, an opening to connection, the way in which we, you know, you're even more stronger together, so to speak.
You had that experience in jail. Which seemed to be a sort of a turning point. It was a phase shift experience. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because you had all night to contemplate and consider this sudden experience of lack of freedom. You know, everything taken. A lot of things, I imagine, happened in that night.
Yeah, I was like, wow, like now I'm really in jail. I've been in jail of my own mind for a long time, but you know, now I'm really locked up. And the funny thing is that we always have the key.
Yeah.
When I was in jail, I didn't actually have the key. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. So now I could either choose to kind of dig in or not. And it really wasn't even a choosing to dig into trying to do deeper work, because I had been in typical psychotherapy, talk therapy for 20 years to no avail. I understood, you know, my issues with my father and, you know, different, you know, pieces of how my ex dumping me 2 days before my wedding was like traumatic, and how, you know, like different pieces, right?
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure out why. And what I'll tell you is, this is going to sound a little woo-woo, but I was raised pretty much with the concept of original sin, or, you know, there's something wrong with you. Check this out. There's a whole other frame that clearly many have known and do know, which is there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah,
right.
There's nothing wrong with you. And we have behavioral adaptations based on a host of causes and conditions and all kinds of things that come into play epigenetically, neurobiologically, subcortically, you know, and all these other reasons, right? Ancestrally, culturally, that come to form personally, experientially, that come to form the way in which we move about the world. But for me, my own scaffolding, to use, you know, Bruce Perry's term, my own personal scaffolding was just having a little bit of curiosity, to go back to that word, about what if I actually thought that there was nothing wrong with me, and that the me wasn't even a local me, but was this arising and passing of whatever, skin cells, molecular changes, the eminence of me dying ever since the time I was born. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of woo-woo, but it's also kind of true, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
We all have a, and that gave me the basis to then go into like, all right, well, if there's nothing wrong with me, then it's just behavior I got to work with, or just beliefs I have to work with, or just emotional learnings that I have to work with. That's workable. I can go there. No problem.
Mm. Right, yes.
And the thing is, that's not very woo-woo. I kind of think that a lot of these impositions, or, I mean, in systems thinking, you know, the initial conditions we create for our experience, they're the woo-woo. I mean, it's just woo-woo to think that you've got original sin, or woo-woo to think that you're privileged and your life is going to be terrific, or woo-woo to think that your life is unprivileged and it's not going to be terrific. They're very, very strange things. There's a lovely comment that I'd love to see what it triggers, but it's a doctor with a patient looking at an x-ray saying, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with you, that's what right with you can't fix.
Yes.
And this
absolutely
is what you're getting at. Yeah,
well, it is. And also that it's not so much the local you in the way that a lot of Western psychotherapy thinks about it. See, through the ancestral lens, or through the aboriginal lens, or the indigenous lens, or through the collective lens, or through the literally, quite literally, like stardust universal lens, there is no separation. We are interconnected. We are, in that way, never able to be dissociated. The dissociation is the original separation of that, you know, feeling, that sense, that learning, that limbic response, that way we've learned to adapt to the world. But that the healing, or the well-being, or the reconnection, or the remembering of that which already is and never was not that, is just the point. So we're not making anything up. We're just returning back to our own luminosity.
Yeah,
and, right. Peter Levine calls it the Elan, or the life force, or whatever you want to call it.
I just call it naturalness. Now.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yes. Some
people describe it in terms of quantum physics.
Well, precisely that. That's exactly what it is. I mean, it's the same. It's the same process. And I think whatever language is most helpful to you to sort of get to that, oh, now I know what we're talking about, is fine. And so find a teacher that speaks in that language. But the truth of it, if you're using the Buddhist lens or the mindfulness lens, you would say the Dharma of it, or the Tao, or the whatever, is just, I mean, you can't really quibble with it, because it's kind of how it goes.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we're already stepping into this, but I'd like to ask the question. So when you're working with clients, can you give us a little bit of a précis of what is important when it, let's talk specifically about trauma, because I want to get to this whole topic of trauma. What specifically is important as a therapist for you when you're working with clients when it comes to trauma? What are you looking for? What are you trying to do with the client? Can you give us a bit of a background there?
Sure. I mean, I think back to what we were saying earlier, I think embodiment is the biggest piece.
Mm-hmm.
Presence, openness, your own self-regulation, your own ability to know how to co-regulate, your own drop-downness, groundedness, your own ability to really check in and tune in with where you are. And then, you know, you shift the antenna based on whatever the radio is playing that day, or, you know, what music you want to hear, or whatever, whoever the client is that's in the office, or clients, if you're working with couples, as I often do. and I think, you know, some people have different, everybody has different kinds of traumatic reactions, the PTSD part, right? Because we know that some things that objectively might be considered traumatic don't affect people. Don't affect certain people in the same way that they affect others that have maybe more complex or developmental trauma. right? More trauma at a younger age that has to do with their attachment and their ability to feel safe with their early caregivers and their ability to have consistent, predictable, and reliable attunement, love, unconditional acceptance, and, you know, to be provided for in those ways. So if I'm working with a client who has someone who, you know, sort of has the basic pieces of secure attachment, it's a little bit different than someone who has insecure attachment from a developmental or complex PTSD standpoint, from childhood sexual abuse or from neglect or that, or even racial and social trauma to someone that I, you know, might work with that suffered a bad car accident or something that's more local, if you will, that can kind of be worked with in a different way. So I think understanding like, okay, well, what is it right now that's an issue for you? I had a hypo-aroused client who's very sort of depressed, low, kind of concave in a way. Concave? Convex. I don't know. Sort of, you know what I'm trying to say. I'm doing it as we're talking. Yes. And you know, really having a hard time negotiating for himself at work, negotiating within his marriage, talking about what his needs are. And that was because he had a really difficult father and brother who would spend a lot of their time yelling at him. And we did a lot of somatic work around and allowing the body to arise using the things like Smovey rings. Like if you ever watch a Peter Levine demo, there are these little ball bearing devices or balance boards to kind of get in touch with the core, being able to kind of touch base with this approach and avoidance to say, well, what is it like when I'm coming close to you like this versus what is it like when you have to come closer to me? Right. So it's like offense, defense on the basketball court. And what is it like to amplify your voice and say to me what you wish you were able to say to your father or your brother or now your wife that you aren't able to or feel like you aren't able to, but here we can practice and here we can do it. So I do a lot of like in vivo redos and invite them to resource around like, well, what would that 5-year old have wanted? And who would he have wanted to be his friend? And who would he have wanted to go skateboarding with? And yeah, let's just go there. Just picture that. Imagine that. Let's hang with that. Let's be with that. And their imaginal piece around their own limbic learnings and their own subcortical synaptic changes, along with the embodiment piece, shifts. And now he's like, okay, you know, after whatever, we worked together for a year or so, he's like, I'm done. We got a raise. I'm having a baby and we're done. I'm like, bye. And I'm like, great. You know, so, and he's very much more free to just enjoy his life. He was very stuck with rumination and regret. Does that help answer some of that?
Oh, absolutely.
No, it's great. It's the sort of thing that we, going back to that naturalness comment that I make, that really what you're doing, which is why we're so keen to talk to you, is this experiencing, this re-experiencing. That's actually the natural way of doing, of coming to those things. And somehow, because of this, that, and the other, the traumas, the nature of life, those experiences of things coming close to you and things moving away, of standing, of balancing, they're sort of not experienced, they're removed. And what we do in our culture is we, you know, by the time you get, I had a 10-year-old and I wanted to get him to do more playful stuff. And he said, oh, yes, but I'm too old for that now. So re-experiencing the way you're doing is so beautiful.
Well, it's so interesting that you mentioned that because I have a lot of toys. I don't know if you can see in my office that I have a lot of different things. And I'm not sure if I should really show you or not, but I have little things like Gumby and little like puppets and, you know, different things like that. And this particular client really liked Zorro. As a kid, he thought that Zorro was keen and skillful, but also like tactful. Like it was important to not just be like the Incredible Hulk. So like I got the Zorro doll and I brought that in and like to evoke and to resource to be able to like call out. And then I'm like, okay, so what's the Zorro energy? Like how would Zorro handle this? Because they have a felt experience of that. Like that's from like my focusing piece is that implicit, Eugene Gendlin's work, and which is kind of the basis of IFS, internal family systems, which I also use a lot with clients. And getting in touch with what's that granular, oh, I like that. Could I be like Zorro? Sure, you already are in your natural state. We just need to let you be like Zorro or let you believe that you could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And that then being able to get them to reimagine that in the session so that you can sort of coach them into a very affective, you know, experiential experience is important to train people. Because I'm finding that more and more using imagination is so important, and people don't see that as a legitimate way of doing therapy.
But the brain doesn't know the difference. That's the funny part. I mean, if you talk to folks like Bruce Ecker and stuff, I mean, it's like, they'll be like, "Why? Wow. Well, like, I was working with a client yesterday and we did a thing about her fourth grade teacher, and he had thrown a violin bow and she was literally still pulled away. And then I said, well, who do you need with you to be able to stand up to him? And she called in the principal and her brother and her best friend, and then a unicorn. And so I said, great. And what are they saying? And what are they doing? And the unicorn was doing what horses do. And, and then I'm like, yeah. And what do you want to say? And what do they want to say? And they're like, we're going to expel you. You can't work here anymore. And yeah, who the heck throws a bow at a kid and blah, blah, blah. And she wanted to get up, and she ended up doing what they call those power poses with one of these.
Right.
You know what I mean? And she was like this. And I'm like, yeah. And really feel them all with you, she was someone who had been, again, in her case, both of these cases are hypo-aroused, but the reverse would be with the hyper-arousal to come and take it down.
Yeah, yeah.
Or have it come down.
This is really neat stuff. The Joseph Ledoux, in his recent book, the four billion years of the emergence of human consciousness. No better than starting at the beginning. But he's just talking about these higher order representations. And he says there's one that happens in the non-conscious and implicit world, one in the explicit. And it's all very technical. And he's sort of rejecting his own ideas about the fact that the amygdala creates fear. And it's actually... But it's all based around fundamentally, once you sort of wade your way through all the technicality, that imagination... changing the nature of the way you think about things, what I call orientation, what systems theory calls initial conditions or organizing principles, that's actually fundamental. And how did we ever lose that? Because when you go back to Indigenous work and you go back to there, that's all they did, really. That was their central piece of work, yeah.
Yeah, it's about the belief, right? And they feel like because a certain thing happened, we're destined to that. And what we had a chance to do is actually let's redo it now and see if you feel any differently about it after we do the redo. And even though the same thing actually is what happened, the teacher did throw the violin bow. I didn't change that. Neither did she. How she feels about that is entirely different. And then what she brings into her marriage and her parenting is entirely different. And so I would encourage her also for that case, and just like with my other client, to buy a unicorn and to keep it on her bedstand or to keep it on her bathroom mirror, because that is reminding, becomes a practice of secure attachment with that energy of defense and I'm on your side and I'm here with you and we're doing this together.
Yeah, kids have been doing that, and everyone accepts it when you're four, but it's absolutely perfectly beautiful when you're 40 as well. And it's wonderful you do this work. Do you find your work focuses around clients, or do you spread yourself around a number of different activities because you've had such a diverse past? I can't imagine you being, too much sort of sitting in the room.
Well, it's true, right? And I don't really know what the next iteration is going to be. What's on the docket now is there's my podcast that I do. Then there's the appearances on other media outlets or things that I may be invited or asked to do. There's the workshops on racialized trauma and things that I've been asked to offer to therapists here in New York that I'll be offering, or on mindfulness or on various I do somatic, teach a class now on somatic experience, co-regulation and things like that. But I think that going forward, I'm trying to figure out how to titrate. I run a grief group, a women's group. I mean, there's just a lot happening. And again, like I said, back to your original question, my presence and my ability to regulate myself and be okay is the key part of all of that for myself and also for them. I don't feel so much depleted, by the way, because some people feel like they get burnt out. It's not so much about that. It's more just making sure that I'm able to be attuned and have a little bit of space in between. So I'd like to be able to do more speaking engagements, perhaps, or take some time to write a book and to share some of these things, perhaps, that even I've talked about here today. I had just gotten a poetry award because I'm a poet. And again, like, I think the limbic memory, the right brain area, you know, is really active in me. And it comes out through words more than like art and painting and stuff. So maybe going back to doing some of that, but I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm here, just everything has just kind of emanated. I didn't have a plan and I don't, but somebody does, the universe does, maybe, I don't know.
Well, I wanted you to say that because as a model, as a bit of an example, that that it's not so much there's no planning, because there's a lot of planning, because there's a whole bunch of skills and things are being put into the play. But I wanted people to hear that when you actually just sometimes put your capacities out there and you enable them and enact them and create experience, that all kinds of fascinating things, surprising and curious, emerge.
Possibility.
Your poetry award, which you said so glibly there, actually is really impressive.
Thank you.
Really impressive. So well done.
Yes, you have a lot to offer on your website, so we will certainly point people to all of those resources that you have there. Your biography is quite incredible and all the things that you've done. So I'd encourage people to check that out as well. And all the amazing people that you have interviewed on your podcast as well. Would love people to check that out. Francesca, before we wrap it up today, is there anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with, especially in terms of what we've been talking about with therapy and trauma?
Thank you for that. You know, I think that one of the things that's been coming up a lot lately, and I'm here in the United States, and at the time of this taping, it's sort of the impeachment and the State of the Union, and we sort of know what's happening politically. I think one of the things that's coming up for me a lot is the sort of social trauma I keep referring to, and sort of how that relates to the personal location and stuff. And in the ways in which when people in positions of privilege, whether it's light skin privilege, cis hetero male privilege, religious privilege, you know, racial privilege, ableist, you know, body privilege, whatever it is, that the call to action that our Greta Thunbergs are asking, is a both and, and that the invitation to be called in to do the work of one's own social location, one's own history, one's own ancestors, to really like get to know where have I come from, as opposed to, well, I need to increase diversity, or it would be good if we had a more multicultural staff, but that they're connected, and that this piece of the racial and social trauma is also for people who have lighter white skin privilege, right? That we have this sort of racial dissociation around not having fully taken in and grokked the truth of the history in our country. And rather than get caught in a shame spiral about it, if we are courageous to go into the work with the scaffolding of what we talked about earlier, that naturalness supporting all of us, and that naturalness necessarily absolutely always connecting all of us, then it doesn't become so much of a fight, or so challenging, or so difficult. And I guess that's the invitation, is to call that in, especially for therapists and especially for trauma therapists, because I feel like the word trauma has been kind of co-opted at a certain level around, or trauma informed, for a very Western, one-pointed, personal kind of thing. And I'm like, actually, we're all in the same boat, breathing the same air, rowing in the same waters, and you too have this racial and social trauma, but it's on the other side of privilege. And that keeps you feeling disconnected and you perhaps feeling neurotic and you perhaps feeling ashamed. And so this isn't about that that's bad or that this is wrong or right or this or that. It's the invitation to come together by, yeah, I can do this work. And as doing that, especially as therapists, but also just as anyone listening, that then I can actually embody that connection and not feel like it's the other to whom I'm giving or to whom I'm therapizing, but it's my brother or sister with whom I'm connecting and that I'm remembering and healing and growing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I know the one we say, you know, be the change you want to see in the world, the Gandhi thing, which is a great, but there's, it's kind of onerous to some extent, and it assumes that there's not, and I've been saying recently, be the being that you want to have in the world. So in other words, you can just be who you are, and that in itself, albeit that you may not be doing this, or you may not be the hero there, or you may not be the stuff, but that your being is a wonderful thing. And I think that's what I took from that beautiful piece that you just said there.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Mm. Francesca Maxime, thank you so much for being with us here on The Science of Psychotherapy. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Absolutely a delight. Thank you so much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
We look forward to catching up with you one day. It'd be wonderful to see you in person. Beautiful.
Yes, I'll head over there. You guys can come to New York. It's, you know, the city that never sleeps, as they say.
That's right. That's lovely. Thank you. Okay. Bye for now.
Take good care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and that was, there's so much there, Matt. I think there's a lot to unpack in that, because there were things that she said in like two sentences that in a paragraph that I thought, oh gosh, and there's some deeply interesting things there, not only what she said but what can trigger thoughts and ideas. So I have a feeling this is going to be one that I'm going to want to listen to two or three times to pick up all the nuance. So
really,
she's very bright and you know, and she works with puppets and Zorro. Yay. What more could you want?
And very, very articulate. I really appreciated that. So as I said at the start of the show, Francesca has a whole lot of resources on her website. So please jump onto her website and have a look. She's got podcasts and blogs and videos and all sorts of resources there. So she has a lot to offer. And hopefully we will be able to have further conversations with her in the future and maybe even get something for the magazine.
Yes. I've prodded her for some poetry, which would be fantastic. Mm. And of course, you know, don't forget if you're out there in podcast land, pop in on The Science of Psychotherapy. Now we've got thescienceofpsychotherapy.com, which gives you an overview, and thescienceofpsychotherapy.net, which goes into our academy and our learning facilities. So we've spread ourselves over two avenues. Go check us out all over the place.
Absolutely. Well, Richard, as always, it's been fun. Thanks for joining us.
Indeed. And we will see you all again next week.
Fantastic. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. See you next week.
Bye for now. Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.